Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to our Super Big Monday show here on Catholic Answers Live. I am your host, Cy Kellett. In this hour, we discuss thinking like Jesus. Can we learn to think like the Master? Can we really learn to put on the mind of Christ? 888-318-7884 is our number, 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour just happens to have a brand new book called Thinking Like Jesus, The Psychology of a Faithful Disciple. Dr. Ray Guarendi is also well known to most of you for his show, The Doctor Is In, which can be heard weekdays on all the EWTN stations, plus more probably. His books, other books in addition to Thinking Like Jesus include You're a Better Parent Than You Think, and Discipline That Lasts a Lifetime. Dr. Ray, thanks so much for being with us for this Monday.
Cy, how are you?
I'm very well. Are you feeling up to doing a full hour with us? You feel like your authentic self?
Well, I got a call from Nick about a minute ago, yeah. And he said, we're ready to go. And I said, Nick, I'm sorry here. My biorhythms are out of sync, and I'm not feeling committed to this particular venture at this time. I was committed about 10 minutes ago, but in the overall emotional ups and downs, my authentic and genuine self, I don't think I'm being honest to you or anyone else to do the show right now. And the poor guy, instead of laughing, he said, well, okay, we'll have Jimmy do it. That's when I yelled at him. I said, there's no way I'm giving up my hour to Jimmy. He's got his own hours.
I think that is just great. Nick is such a good man. And he, as I have said many times on here, he's the hardest working person at Catholic Answers. And I just love the fact that he would have run down the hall and gotten Jimmy because Dr. Ray was not feeling authentic today. He would have done it. I'm not feeling it.
Good to be with you guys. I always like being with you guys.
Oh, it's so great to have you here. And we're very, very grateful when you do, because you're a very big media personality. You're a superstar. And to have you on is, I don't know. I don't know how to finish
that. I can't acknowledge that status. I cannot acknowledge that superstar status.
No?
Because whether you know this or not,
okay.
I'm making my George Foreman comeback for the Humility Award.
All right. Good for you.
I had dominated it for 8 years. I went into retirement. Al Cresta took the Humility Award from me. We found out recently it was a participation trophy that he won.
Oh.
And so I'm back in training. So I can't acknowledge superstar.
All right.
But I appreciate it, though.
So we'll just say he's a regular star. Not a, it's like a what's the difference between a model and a supermodel? I don't know the difference between a star and a superstar. But if
I can be an asteroid.
Okay.
I can be an asteroid.
Fair enough. Well, we're glad to have you. Thinking like Jesus, actually, we're instructed to put on the mind of Christ. So how do we go about thinking like Jesus?
There are a bazillion books out there, Cy,
yeah,
that talk about putting on the mind of Christ. And they tend to be books that are inspirational, a lot of scripture quotes,
yeah,
extrapolating from our Lord's teaching and how it can fit everyday life. Well, what would happen if you took a shrink like me, and I took a lot of psychological principles that are now standard. This is the mindset out there now in the secular world. And I said, where does psychology clash with Christianity?
Oh.
And where do they cooperate?
Yes.
So if I take, and when you and I talk a little bit more here, you're going to see there's a number of parallels between some psychological principles I'll bring up and thinking a little better in terms of getting along with people, in terms of this crazy thing called self-image. When do you need to forgive and not forgive? Are you holy or are you a jerk? So it's got about 35 chapters in it. They're all kind of small, bite-sized. Let's take a look at this particular aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Of a mindset that now dominates our culture. I'll give you an example of one. How many times did our Lord say, you're supposed to forgive?
7 times 70.
Right. And he didn't mean literally 490, right? What did he mean?
You just keep going. Just keep forgiving. Don't stop.
All right. I don't agree with that.
What? Wait, what?
I do not agree with that. As a matter of fact, I've spoken in the book that I believe that probably at most I would have to forgive about 50% of the time. Maybe 50% of the time. The reason for this is much of the time that I take offense or I feel hurt or someone has done me wrong and I feel magnanimous, in forgiving them, look at what a good Christian I am. I'm so magnanimous. I forgive. I forgive my mother-in-law. She's so obnoxious. She makes so many critical remarks about me. More than half the time, the offense doesn't exist.
Oh.
It's in my head. And so therefore, I'm forgiving thin air. And you see what that does to your soul?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, first of all, it makes you more prideful.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm a forgiven guy. Gosh, you know what she said the other day? I couldn't believe it. And in fact, she meant nothing by it. Okay? But I impugned her motive, and then I took offense, and then I said, oh, Lord, help me to forgive her. Instead of saying, dear Lord, show me if there's anything to forgive here. If this just isn't my prickliness. See what I mean?
Yes, yes. I was struck by that in several chapters of this book, I have to say. There was one chapter where you talked about something that I immediately knew you were wrong because it applied to me. So I thought, nope, he's wrong.
And then I had you in mind.
Yeah. And then,
in that chapter?
Yeah. But then I kept reading. I realized, oh, he's right. Okay. So there's this thing that you can do when the moment gets heated, when somebody has pushed my button, as they say, or whatever, and now I'm all fired up. And if you will just not speak for a minute or two. Right.
10 seconds.
Is it 10 seconds? Right. So I think the name of the chapter is It Will Pass Quickly or something like that. And that is such wisdom. And I think we are taught in a way because we're a society that's taught, you know, if you're offended, then share that offense, you know, make a big, big noise. And we're taught speak out. And if you'll just stop for 10 seconds. There's a chance for you to breathe and realize that thing that I'm going to say is not what I should be saying. It's going to hurt this person.
Cy, you are a young pup.
Yeah.
So would you remember something called assertiveness training?
Oh, I think I vaguely remember that. Yeah, from about the same time as transcendental meditation, I think. Assertiveness.
Assertiveness training basically said, To keep from getting ulcers, if you want to view it that way,
yeah.
To keep yourself from getting stressed and upset at people, you need to assert your rights. You need to let them know where they've stepped on you.
Right. Right, yeah.
Where they've inappropriately invaded your emotional space, so to speak. Okay?
Yep.
Now, assertiveness training, basically, if you follow it, can make you pretty obnoxious because you feel like I got to tell everybody when and how they offended me. I'm going to tell my mother-in-law. Instead of ignoring what she said about my children, I'm going to, you know, Emily, I don't appreciate you making that comment about my son. And of course, Emily will go, oh, Ray, I didn't realize that. I'm so sorry. Of course. Thank you for bringing it to my attention. I feel so much better now that you've cleared the air with your assertiveness training.
I don't think that's going to happen.
90% of the times that I have to confess stuff in confession, word-wise, is when I spoke within the first 15 seconds of my emotional surge. When I most felt like saying it, because physiologically speaking, my body was screaming.
Yeah.
Let him have it. Let him have it.
Right.
If I just use the intellectual part of me and tell myself over and over, you say it, Ray, you're going to regret it. You say it, Ray, you're going to regret it. You say it, you're going to cause more problems. You say it, it's not going to be understood anyway. If you say it, it's not going to create peace. It's just going to create more of an argument. Shut up, Ray. You never have to apologize for what you didn't say.
And it struck me reading that chapter, and I want to get to a couple others that I was struck by. But
the whole book was about you, Si. Yeah. You want to get down to it.
Well, it was, really. I mean, in the sense that nobody's that unique. You know, we all have basically the same structure. So, but what struck me about that is that the mind of Christ's way of thinking is one that values other people's peace, that values the comedy of the home, a basic kind of I don't know what another word for it, but peace. And that the mind of the world says, say your bit, and so even in that little chapter there is something so Christian about being reminded, no, you actually can go, you know, a whole day without having to speak your mind in the heat of a moment, and you're going to be better off, and the world's going to be better off if you don't. So just follow Jesus in that.
Let's play Jeopardy.
All right.
You're going to have signature songs for $100, Alex, okay?
Okay.
What was Nat King Cole's signature song?
Okay. What is Unforgettable?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. $100. Christians should have a similar song. Unoffendable.
Yes.
What is at the basis of being offended? Most of the time, we get offended with words. Very few people have punched me in the face. Okay? Very few people have taken a ball bat to the fender of my car. Well.
Well, you must live in a better neighborhood than I do.
Yeah,
but okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, you get gunshots fired at you. But all the offense that I take comes from words. Now, as a Christian, they never should have said that to me.
Yes.
Don't they realize I didn't mean that? Don't they realize that I'm a good person? Don't they realize that I'm trying very hard? How could they say that about me? At the root of this kind of hypervigilant offense is pride. In the chapter, I say, if we were in fact Christians like our Lord,
yeah,
we would never get offended. Because we wouldn't expect to be understood all the time. We wouldn't expect to be complimented. We wouldn't expect that people are going to show us respect. Why? Because, well, I'm a good person. Why don't they recognize that? Unoffendable. I'll tell you, you want a measuring stick of how you're doing in terms of your own day-to-day pride with everybody? How easily you get offended.
Well, I just need to calm down for a minute before I say anything.
I know, right. And I didn't want to say anything to you, buddy, but you said about four things in the previous 10 minutes that upset me, but I let them go.
Okay. Well, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to ask you, because I noticed I hadn't thought about the structure of it until you mentioned it, that there are points in which the teaching of Christ is actually greatly at odds. And it's not all a book about how Christ's teaching is better than what a modern psychologist will teach you. But there are moments that are at odds. There was one that struck me. I want to come back to that when we come back. But I got to let people know about this. Trent Horn, our apologist here, is debating an atheist gentleman, Dan Barker, tonight on the topic, does the Christian God exist? And it's not just does God exist. No, it's does the Christian God exist? So this is something you don't want to miss. The debate will be streamed live at 5 p.m. Pacific time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern, right on our Facebook page. So you just go to Facebook, type in Catholic Answers, and you can watch that debate. Trent Horn with atheist Dan Barker. Does the Christian God exist? I'm going to give you a little spoiler. He does.
Listen. Have a question? Listen. We've got answers.
Catholic Answers.
I love it.
Live.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
I've got a few things here and there that I've learned along the way, and I like to do. Plus, I'm always studying history, so I try to bring in some of the historical perspective, especially at a time in our history when people don't know much history anymore.
Open Line with Father Mitch Pacwa,
Wednesday afternoon, 3 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Dr. Ray Guarendi, our guest this hour, and we are delighted to have him. He's got a brand new book out called Thinking Like Jesus, The Psychology of a Faithful Disciple. And I'm about to hold up my copy of the book to the camera for those who are watching on Facebook and YouTube and all that, because part of it I highlighted in yellow, chapter 14, Value-Laden Words Are Bad, which is a funny, if you think about it, that's a funny title for a chapter. But this sentence I highlighted, in graduate school, I was taught a second language, call it the language of non-judgmentalism. And you go on to give some examples of it. A lot of use of the word unacceptable, words like unacceptable, unfortunate, inappropriate, never words like good or bad, evil or heroic or anything like that. Words that have they feel like they've been sapped almost of any kind of impact. That's inappropriate. We don't do that. That's inappropriate. Is this a point, this kind of use of language that doesn't judge at all, is this a point at which therapeutic psychology departs from Christianity?
Interesting paradox. When I was in grad school, we were told, as therapists, relentlessly told, you don't judge. You make no judgments about what the client tells you. You do not enter into any kind of worldview, any kind of perspective. You simply accept everything the client tells you. Well, even as a young shrink, I realized that this doesn't work. This doesn't work. Everybody carries some system into therapy. Whether they deny it or not, it's going to be there. And part of that non-judgmentalism was the extrapolating from non-judgmental theory to language. And you say things like, excuse me, Butkus, ice pick in your sister's head, inappropriate choices. Take two stickers off your system, we'll give them back when the bleeding stops at the hospital. You know, can you imagine going to the priest? Bless me, Father, mistakes were made. and I would like to apologize if God took something I did out of context,
right.
Became offended by it. Well, I'm sorry for his oversensitivity. I mean, this is what's happening. We're not allowed to say that leaving your wife and five kids is bad. Yeah. You know, it was his life choice.
Yeah.
You know, when my kids were, before we started homeschooling, they were in Catholic school, a couple of them, and the kids were being instructed for confession, and they were told to say what they had to say to the priest as mistakes. 2 + 2 = 5 is a mistake.
Right.
You know, moral misconduct is more than a mistake. But that language, you see it pervades parenting, Cy. It's all through parenting. It's all through enlightened parenting. You go to any child development run daycare and listen to the teachers. Rocky, punching your classmate in the face, inappropriate action. What might be another option? Yeah, we've morally antisepticized the language, and Christians of all people know that you have to put moral language on conduct. You have to, or else it's stripped of any kind of meaning.
So Jesus does not. I suppose that this is where thinking like Jesus is it makes a pretty stark departure from this therapeutic way of talking. So I don't. I guess my question is, like, how does Jesus address these things then? If I'm going to think like Jesus about these value things, about bad, doing good and bad or evil and, you know, that kind of thing, how do I think like Jesus and not like the modern therapeutic culture?
Let me tie this into another chapter in the book. When I was in the evangelical world, I was there for 8 years. I left the Catholic Church kind of indifferently. Figured I was going to find Jesus where I would be most comfortable and somewhat entertained. We had Bible studies. And one of the questions that often came up in Bible study is, why do people have such a problem with us? Is it what is it about our moral stances that bother people? And the common answer, which is really a self-defensive answer, was they're convicted. They realize somewhere down deep that we're right, and this bothers them. So therefore, they react negatively to us. I remember thinking, Cy, that may be part of it. But I have to wonder if sometimes people react negative to me as a Christian because I'm a jerk.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. The chapter is titled, Am I Holy or Am I a Jerk? Because I can come across as superior. I can come across holier than you. I can come across with an attitude that clearly shows that I am above you. And that can come across in my language. You know, let's say that my son is living with his girlfriend. And let's say that, of course, he wasn't raised that way. Now, what do I do with that girlfriend? What do I do when he wants to bring her to my house on Christmas Eve? Do I carry this sour puss face just to reinforce to them I don't approve of this? Or do I welcome her and I love her and my son clearly knows I don't approve of the arrangement. Obviously, I raised him for 20 years. But I got to love her and I can't come across as a jerk. And I can't come across with judgmental language about what they're doing because I'm going to lose my son. And furthermore, the girl he's with, if she ever becomes his wife, she's going to have a very sour taste in her mouth about this guy who proclaimed himself some kind of elite Christian, but at the same time was the person in her life who showed her the least love. I can't do that.
Yeah, this is another thing that strikes me about this book, Thinking Like Jesus, is how often you're reminding us. I have to say, I sometimes think taking a little delight in reminding us that most of these situations, these difficult situations we get in, we're implicated in them. It's not just somebody imposing something on us like we're a victim. Like the chapter on toxic people, where you talk about like the idea that, yeah, maybe that person is toxic for you, but maybe you just don't want to be around them and behave yourself as well. You know that. So you kind of, you're not letting us off the hook. I'll say that.
Psychology has certain catchphrases, Cy, that it uses. And these catchphrases drift into the popular mindset. Toxic people is one of them. Not unusually, someone will go to a therapist and talk about some person in their life. Usually it's a family member, by the way. And they will say how this person disturbs their peace. When they are around this person, they're on edge. They feel so much better if they wouldn't have to deal with this person. It just happens to be their mother, okay? This is not the mailman that comes by for 2 seconds and drops your mail off that you can avoid. This is your mother. And so the psychologist may say, well, you know, that's a toxic individual. And for our own peace, for our own emotional stability, you need to rid yourself of toxic people in your life. And my point is this. Very few people in our lives are toxic. Yes, there are those who are dangerous or abusive, and you have to protect yourself or your children from them. But most people that we label toxic, the better word is difficult. They're not easy to be around. They're unpleasant. Yeah, they make snarky remarks. But it happens to be your sister, okay?
Yeah.
This is not the lady that teaches swimming lessons at the local Y that you're just not going to take her class. This is your sister. So Christians especially should recognize two things. One, most people are not toxic. They may be difficult or unpleasant. And two, here's the key question, Si, and I think it's what you were alluding to. Always got to ask yourself, in my perception of this toxic person, how much of it is my dynamic? How much of it is do I take offense? How much of it is it that I, in fact, don't relate well?
Yeah, you keep implicating me. Be right back with more Dr. Ray.
Call us now with your question on Catholic Answers Live.
With the recent commemoration of the 50th anniversary of the release of Humani Vitae, there have been fresh attacks on Catholic teaching from outside and, unfortunately, inside the Church. That's why Catholic Answers thought it critical to provide a vigorous affirmation of Pope Paul VI's prophetic wisdom with our newest book, Inseparable, Five Perspectives on Sex, Life, and Love in Defense of Humani Vitae. We asked five distinguished contributors to reflect on and defend Humani Vitae from five perspectives, each of them compelling, together forming a mosaic of truth. Don't be caught uninformed when the topic comes up among friends, family, and coworkers. Order your copy of Inseparable today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or by visiting the shop at Catholic.com.
A generation ago, Christian parents didn't have to worry about how to explain transgenderism to their 9-year-old children or help their teenager deal with mockery at school for believing in traditional marriage. But today, as our culture decays, we have to know how to talk to our children about these issues. In Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues, Layla Miller and Trent Horn give parents the crucial tools and techniques to form children with the understanding they need, appropriate to their age and maturity level, to meet the world's challenges. If we're not teaching our children how to understand tough moral issues, then the world will. Read Made This Way and learn how to give your kids a firm foundation on which to build a life of moral clarity and happiness. Order your copy of Made This Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000 or logging onto the shop at Catholic.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest this hour, Dr. Ray Guarendi, has a brand new book, Thinking Like Jesus, The Psychology of a Faithful Disciple. And Dr. Ray, throughout the book, I was kind of teasing that you feel implicated, but that is one of the things about the Christian faith, maybe as opposed to the therapeutic faith of the what some people call the, I guess, Church of Nice or something. I can never quite remember all of the catchphrases, but this modern idea, it strikes me when I'm teasing you about you keep implicating me when I'm reading it, but there is something about the Christian faith that it, however gently or severely, it seems to be constantly the message is you are not the center of the world. You have things to do. You have a mission from God. Get on with it. Stop being the center of the world. Whereas the message of the world seems to be if you're not the center, something's wrong.
How many options, Cy, would you think you'd come across if you typed in child self-esteem search? Want to guess?
A million.
Last I looked, it was over 90 million.
Yeah.
Do you think that you would have the same amount of options if you typed in child humility search?
No. But okay, so say something about that. Now, like, you do address humility in this book, True Humility and False Humility. So I don't know what a psychologist is taught about humility. You know that. But so what is the proper role of humility? And how do we be humble and think like Jesus?
Humility is not a word that you're going to hear in much pop psychology lexicon. It is a word that's smack in the middle of Christian virtue. In psychology, what is paramount is self-image. Ray Guarendi has to think that Ray Guarendi is a wonderful human being, and Lord forbid that anybody would imply that Ray Guarendi is not just a special human being. One of the great quotes in the movie The Incredibles, I don't know if you remember this, the kid was saying he's special because he can run really, really fast. His mother says, I think the kid's name is Dash. Dash, everybody is special. And he says, if everybody is special, nobody is special, which is a great line.
Right.
Now, in psychology, the push in the 70s, and since then, by the way, the man who really pushed hard on this was a guy named Carl Rogers, okay? Yeah. Unconditional positive regard was Rogers' big thing. He since said, I think I created a monster. He said, you know, because if you seek self-image just for the sake of self-image, you get self-centeredness.
Mm.
From a research perspective, self-image isn't related to much of anything. Oh, yeah, the theories say it's related to better grades, and it's related to not using drugs, and it's related to not getting in trouble with the law. Not at all, okay? So that's the first thing. But Christians, and here's where we diverge from the self-image movement. Who says Christians should have infinite value? Who says this? God. God says it.
Yeah.
The creator of the universe says that Psychelet is of infinite worth. Not Psychelet. You don't need Psychelet to say it.
Yeah.
You've got the creator of the universe who established your self-image. And I think that's part of where people... I know an awful lot of folks come in my office, and they're messed up. And they're Christians. And they're messed up because they say, I lack confidence. I don't know. I just don't feel I'm very good. I say, are you a Christian? Well, yes. The Lord is the center of my life. Well, doesn't he say that you're infinitely valuable? And they look at me with this deer look, as if, well, I guess, but aren't I supposed to think I'm wonderful? You don't have to. Our Lord said things like, when you do something good, just say we're worthless servants. What? Didn't he not have Psych 101 in synagogue? What's with him? Or is he saying stuff like this? You know,
yeah.
Esteem others more highly than yourself, St. Paul says. Oh, now, wait a minute, Paul. Hold on here, buddy. Didn't you see my flower on the bulletin board? Where it says, there's nobody like me, I'm wonderful.
Mm.
Yes, of course we value our children, we value ourselves, but because of God's perspective, not because of some artificially constructed Ray Guarendi says Ray Guarendi's wonderful. What if Ray Guarendi's a jerk making that judgment?
That's right. You have to have a standard outside of yourself in order for yourself to, right.
I like saying I'm wonderful. Shoot, I don't argue with me.
No, I hardly ever argue with myself about that either, except when I'm reading one of your books that's telling me I need to develop healthy humility. But it strikes me that maybe for a child, that our children today in this world who are told that you're special, everybody's special, that one of two bad outcomes could come from that. One, they're not going to believe you, in which case they just see the world as a lie, or they are going to believe you and they're going to be little monsters.
They can be entitled. Don't forget, if I have a wonderful self-image, it all ties into my entitlement that you better not offend me. You better recognize how wonderful I am, too. You know, and therefore, if you would even bring up anything that I might have to work on, if you're my brother-in-law and you say to me, you know, Ray, sometimes you say things you shouldn't say. I do. What? What do you? Yeah, well, give me an example. Rather than saying, how do I do that? Tell me, please. I want to know. I want to hear what you have to say.
Right, right.
That's the only way you're going to self-improve. There's a chapter in the book that really speaks to me, Cy. I call it Close the Book. Not alluding to close that book.
Yeah.
When you have folks in your life that you have a hard time relating to, is there 20 or 30 of them, or maybe one, two, or three?
One, two, or three.
Right, exactly. A very small handful of people in our lives give us the most frustration, give us the most disappointment, give us the most irritation. And here's the second question. Of those folks, have they only been like that for a week or a month or years?
Yeah, years, right.
Right. So, Cy, here's a question for you. When are you going to get to the point where you recognize that's just the way they are? When are you going to close the book and say, hey, why do I keep frustrating myself when she behaves the same way she's always behaved for 19 years?
Yeah.
When am I going to get to the point where she loses the power to ruin my day with a remark, because I kind of know what she is? And I'm not saying I hate her for it, and I'm not saying she should roast in hell. I'm just coming to a logical, realistic conclusion. How much evidence do I need to go, well, this isn't surprising anymore? This has been happening for 2 decades.
Yeah, it's surprising how little little evidence actually figures into our learning process, though. But
I asked somebody, I say, well, how long has she made snarky remarks about that? Oh, my, I've probably since I married her son. Well, how long have you been married? 14 years. You haven't come to the conclusion yet? This is probably going to keep going.
You haven't noticed a pattern.
Yeah, for you to get along with this lady, you're going to have to close the book and realize this is just the way it is.
Thinking Like Jesus, the Psychology of a Faithful Disciple is the book. Here's my problem. Okay, so more than anything, even more than getting it myself, I want my kids to understand this, to see that thinking like Jesus is not like thinking like the world. It's not like thinking like most of what you'll hear on Oprah, not to pick on anybody, but it's that thinking like Jesus is different. How do I communicate that to my children without my children having had enough of me?
You want the good news or the bad news?
Well, I'll take them both. Go ahead. Just lay it on me.
Well, the bad news is, hey, you better think that way somewhat yourself, or you're not going to be able to impart it.
Yeah,
okay?
Right.
That's the first thing. Well, you know, honey, your grandma is really a toxic individual. She's really obnoxious, and she can be so easily offensive, and I understand how you get hurt by her. Well, there you go. Okay, that's going to make the kid deal with grandma. Instead of saying, honey, grandma can say a lot of things that can hurt you, and you don't have to be hurt by what she says. She says things, and sometimes she doesn't think about them, and she can be that way, and we got to love her anyway. So the good news is, with a kid, they're more malleable. You sit down and talk with a kid about this kind of stuff, and they are easier to imbibe this stuff than a person in therapy. Because a person in therapy's got long-standing habits.
Right.
Long-standing attitudes that are just sometimes locked in cement. But a little kid, 5, 8, 10, 12-year-old kid, notice I didn't mention any teenagers because they all think they're smarter than we are anyway, but a little kid, you explain it to him this way enough times, it sinks in a lot easier to them than it does to your spouse or to your mother or to your obnoxious brother-in-law.
I see. I got to warn you to stop insinuating that my mother might be an unpleasant person. She listens every day, Dr. Ray, so
Oh, nice move, Si. Okay.
Now I tell you.
Swoop, you negate everything I've said. I don't want to say this. I'm going to get you in trouble, but you asked me before the show.
Oh, come on now.
Did you bring these things up? My mother listens, and she needs to hear this.
Oh, I should. Oh, man. I thought I would get the last word in. What a fool am I to think that I could outdo Ranger Randy. Now I have to go home to my mother and explain to her Dr. Ray was kidding. Right, Dr. Ray?
Well,
right?
Here's right? the truth, Si.
Yes.
Here is the truth.
Yeah.
I got this anonymous letter.
Oh.
And it said, my son is a host of a very popular Catholic call-in show.
Mm-hmm.
Could you please send him your book? Because I really think that a lot of the way that I raised him fell short in some of the ways he thinks. Could you send him your book? And maybe he can learn something. I don't know who the woman was, but... Last name began with a K or something like that. I forget. I don't know what it was.
Oh, I was going to say it was probably Mrs. Usher, Jerry Usher's mom. But okay, well, I'll go with that. Hey, I've been ignoring callers. I forgot that we're a call-in show because I have so much fun talking to Dr. A. He just said the word call-in show, and I was like, oh, yeah, callers. So when we come back, I'll get to the callers. But I want to let you know, last fall we distributed more than 100,000 copies of Why We're Catholic, thanks to listeners like you who bought a case or two, or some cases three, and handed them out to friends, family, even strangers. And with that Advent right around the corner, we thought, well, let's make that even bigger deal. We got more books on sale for bulk prices now. Books priced up to $16.95 now can be had for as low as $1 or $5 per copy, depending on the book. Books like Why We're Catholic, Made This Way, Delivered, Restored, Persuasive Pro-Life, all of our 20 Answers titles. It's a great way to share your faith and save some money while you're doing it. Just go to Bulk Book Specials at shop.catholic.com. Get your books in bulk today.
Your questions, Catholic Answers, live.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
I love the show, but I just wanted to call to encourage that previous caller who called about the Latin Mass and just encourage him to keep giving it a try and especially try to meet some folks outdoors and let his wife meet some people, and that does make that experience so much better. And thank you for your historical background, and it was a good interpretation of the history.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to all of our listeners, especially my mom. The number is 888-31-TRUTH, and I have been unjust to callers, so we'll go now to Matt in Marshall, Minnesota. That's a lot of alliteration. Matt in Marshall, Minnesota, watching on YouTube. Matt, your question for Dr. Ray.
It is a lot of M's. I was just going through Facebook, you know, within the hour, and I came across a story about an atheist group shut down a prayer session either before or after a football game because one of the coach's daughters was sick, so they decided to have a prayer for her, but naturally the atheist group didn't like that and shut it down, citing the First Amendment. And I just read that and got really offended. I didn't say anything or type anything because I know nobody cares what I think, but I was mad about it, and I was offended about it, and I just went on a little monologue in my head about it. And then you came on the show, and I was listening, and I kind of thought to myself, well, when is it okay to be offended? Am I wrong to be mad at this atheist group for shutting down a prayer session? I don't know. What's your perspective on that, I guess?
Most of the time, Matt, when we get offended, it's because we believe somebody's done something personally to us. You saw injustice. You saw someone attempting to squash another person's freedom, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, basically shutting them up. And understandably, you said, this is wrong. This is offensive. I think that if you take it a step further and say, I as a Christian take personal offense to this, Well, I suppose you could do that, but all you do is agitate yourself. I have another book on anger, and I talk about righteous anger versus right-filled anger. You know, righteous anger is kind of like our Lord's anger when he was angry at wrongs or hurts and injustices done to others. Right-filled anger more often tends to be when we get all upset because we take something personally, that this was somehow aimed at me. I think that's one way to separate the two.
What do you think of that, Matt?
I see, yes. No, I appreciate that. I was hoping you'd say something along those lines. And yes, I totally agree.
Wait a minute, Matt. You were hoping I'd say something along those lines. You already knew the answer. You just wanted me to stamp it.
Well, I thought you might say, well, it almost sounded like saying being offended is wrong, period. Don't be offended.
Nah.
Quit whining. And I sometimes it's okay
of,
to be offended, isn't it, though?
Well, yeah, but 80% of our offense is personal. It really is. Okay, yeah. I spend a lot more time being upset and irate over things that I think have been done directly at me, oftentimes I misinterpret it, than I do looking at injustice and wrongs and immorality in the world and against the Lord's people.
Right, macro versus micro, yes.
Yeah.
Yep. I see your point.
You love those M words, Matt, from Marshall, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Macro, micro. I can do M words too. Thanks for the call, Matt. I do appreciate it. I have to say though, Dr. Ray, you tell me if this is a bad strategy. You said, you know, sometimes when we're avoiding toxic people, what we're really doing is we just don't want to behave in a Christian way. We don't want to have to go through that. And so we just kind of put the person out. But I actually find, and maybe you'll find this shocking, I find a lot of news reporting and commentary to be toxic. So I've started to just ignore it, and I feel better because
here's the difference.
Okay,
here's
go ahead.
The difference. Si, you don't have to have those people in your life.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah,
you,
right.
It's like the mail carrier. Okay, he's obnoxious. All right, I'll collect the mail after he's down the street. You don't have to have this ushy-gushy love relationship. When I talk about toxic people, I'm talking about people that are in the center circle of your life.
Yeah.
Deep friends, relatives, coworkers, boss, that you have to deal with. You don't have an option here. Okay? So therefore, you need to stretch as far as you can to get along with them. And in so doing, you'll probably reduce them from the label toxic to unpleasant. Or difficult.
Right.
There's the difference. Yeah, you look at the news and I just want to throw stuff at the television. Said it's so obnoxious. Some of the stuff these folks are saying and doing. Okay.
Right.
So I find that I can avoid them. It's just unpleasant and unnecessary. But I'm not shunning them from my life as I would someone that the Lord says, hey Ray, this is your adult son who's 23 years old. You better be real careful about writing him off.
Right. Right. I see what you're saying. Yeah. Because when the caller says, you know, that sense of being offended by that action that he read about, I don't know if I'm copping out by saying, there's only so many things I can be worried about. If I'm watching the news and it's just upsetting me, I mean, then maybe I'm not going to do it.
Well, you got to spend your emotional energy.
Ah, yeah.
In stuff you can control.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
If there are people in my family that I don't relate to well, then my emotional energy has to figure out, okay, how can I be at least a pleasant, civil person to them?
Yeah.
And ignore an awful lot of the way they act or the way they behave because it's just obnoxious, or they pick a fight over politics and I'm going to try to avoid that. I got to somehow. It doesn't mean I like being around them. And it doesn't mean that I would choose to spend free time with them. It just means that in the circumstances of family life, I got to work a lot harder to get along with people that are, you know, if my mother says, Ray, you got to get along with your brother. You're both my sons. And I say, Mom, I don't really care what you think. He's obnoxious. I don't want him around. He's unpleasant. And if you have a birthday party and he comes, I don't.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. See, the other problem is this. Okay, let me draw an illustration here. Do you know the people who are most likely to walk out of my office in anger?
Bill collectors?
Well, Si, you're not going to want to hear this. People who see themselves as a far superior Christian to their spouse.
Oh.
Because if, for example, they come in and they're very upset at their spouse because their spouse does not embrace religion like they do.
Uh-huh.
And I gently, how I really have to be gentle about this, I gently try to point out that, well, you operate under a different system. You know, your system says forgive. Your system says watch what you say. He doesn't or she doesn't operate out of that system. And so they think I'm blaming them. And their attitude is, wait a minute, I'm the Christian here. Why are you questioning my conduct? I've had a couple of them just crumple up a check and throw it down on the desk and walk out.
I wish people that were mad at me would throw a check on the desk before they walk out, but that doesn't happen. I guess that comes with an advanced degree. Al in Pennsylvania is next. Al's listening on the EWTN app. Al, you are on with Dr. Ray Guarendi. Your question, please.
Hi, Dr. Ray.
Hey, Al.
Si and Dr. Oki, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm a big fan, and I look forward to get your book and read it, hopefully, one day at least. So, just in brief, you were talking about assertiveness, and I'm familiar with these terms because I studied psychology. Anyway, I don't want to get into that too much. So, you said something about about righteous anger, which sometimes I think you agree, sometimes it could be at something unrighteous done to us, if that makes sense. Like, people talk about if someone is heavily, significantly violated, let's say the Me Too movement or whatever, or your rights are really violated, you can speak, you can be righteously angry, although this violation at yourself. So my question is that where to draw the line, or do you have a criteria to have an imbalance when to speak? Let's say I have an example, which I think maybe you're an answer to my prayer to the Holy Spirit for wisdom. A coworker like angered me or has been treating me in a disrespectful way recently. So should I speak or not? Am I going to create a chaos? Is it personal? And I prayed about it. And I'm planning maybe I'll talk today because I work overnight or not, and maybe I should stay silent or give it a time. Maybe she didn't mean, maybe.
Al, I'm going to just interrupt you to let Dr. Ray respond because we're so limited on time. But how do you make an evaluation like that, when to speak, when not to speak in a work situation like that?
You exercise judgment. If you've spoken before, and most people have, they know how it turned out. So if you recognize that part of being difficult as that person is they're also defensive and they are also, who, me? I'm not like that. So if you recognize that, you realize that whatever you speak up is going to make it worse. Now, Al was saying something like, well, should I move to another shift? Should I get away from this guy? I always tell people, do you want to stay on the shift you're on? Well, yes, I would prefer it. Would you stay on it if he wasn't there? Yes, I would. Well, then maybe a way to deal with this is to find out why you're getting upset over this guy. You take him as putting you down? He can't put you down if you don't take it as a put down. He can say what he wants. So what? Or he's critical, or he says snarky remarks about your Catholic faith. All right. Go in one ear and out the other, because I'm not going to let you get to me the way you've been getting to me the last 3 years. If you can do some of that, you can basically stay on the shift you're on, and this guy doesn't have that kind of power over you anymore.
Al, we'll have to leave it there because you can probably hear the music playing. I appreciate that call, Al, and you're being our prayers. The new book from Dr. Ray Guarendi is Thinking Like Jesus. I guess if you're going to find somebody to think like, you couldn't find anybody better than that. The Psychology of a Faithful Disciple, you can get it from EWTN Publishing, probably just about anywhere where good Catholic books are sold. Dr. Ray Guarendi, thank you very much for a very fine hour.
Cy, it's always a pleasure.
It is for me. It certainly is, even though, even despite being corrected and coming to the realization I need to make actual improvements in my life. I like to avoid all that, but you get me right through that. And I really enjoyed the book, too. So I appreciate the time, appreciate the book, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for joining us today on Catholic Answers Live.